Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the Race IndyCar podcast. It's only the second time it took me to actually get those words out, so that's a great start to this episode of the show. Coming up, we have me speaking better than I just did over the last few minutes. We have Linus Lundqvist with an in-depth interview about his move to Chip Ganassi Racing. A little bit of kind of behind the scenes about how a driver move kind of comes about, and as a kind of cross-section, it wasn't a bad driver move to choose in terms of going from being on the sideline after not being able to get a seat in IndyCar after winning the Indy Next Championship, and across the space of a month going from making your IndyCar debut to being in arguably the best team in the series. But before we get into that, I've got J.R. Hildebrand alongside me, and listeners, you are finding this out at the same time as J.R. Hildebrand. Apple tells me, JR, that this is our 100th episode together.
Is that
which
right?
Which is quite cool. I wanted to get your live reaction to how you feel about that.
That's shocking. I wouldn't have thought 100 seems like a lot.
To contextualize that for you, that's 4 days and 4 hours of time that you've wasted speaking to me.
And I still have the same shitty laptop, so not much has changed since the beginning.
And I still can't read out an intro, so we're right back where we started, JR. I wanted to bring you on this week to do a little bit of news, just because I thought it'd be a nice way to start the show before we dive into this Linus Lundqvist interview. And as the race reported last week, or whenever it was, depending on when you listen to this podcast, Andretti Autosport's long-running saga of what to do with its kind of car lineup, I guess you would call it, has been decided as they stick with three cars for next season. So we've got Kyle Kirkwood, Colton Herta and Marcus Ericsson. If you go back a couple of episodes in this show, you'll find an interview with Marcus Ericsson about his move to Andretti, talking about some of the stuff that's going on there. But I wanted to get into that a little bit more with JR. He's got a lot of experience with different teams. I guess you probably fall on the side of more dealing with teams where you've been the only driver as opposed to a team shrinking from four to three cars. But I kind of wanted to get your insight and kind of how you feel this is going to impact the team, because I feel like for the previous 99 episodes of this show, a lot of the time when we talk about Andretti, it's about their kind of either underperforming or suffering with some sort of issue. Execution's the word that quite often gets used, whether that's pit stop strategy, stuff that happens in races where they don't seem as consistent as the pace, you know, says where they should finish a race. And we've kind of seen this trend a little bit in IndyCar in recent years, where we've seen a few teams downsize. We've got outliers to that with Ganassi, obviously going to five cars next year. And we're going to get into that with Linus Lundqvist a little bit later in the show. But we've seen Penske drop from four cars to three, and it obviously suited them well. They won the Indy 500 this year and won the championship with Will Power last year with that kind of three-car lineup. So I guess, to put it really simply, JR, the benefits versus negatives, I guess the positives, you're getting more data if you've got more cars on the track, so that's a good thing. The negatives, I guess, are you're spreading more people across, you know, you're kind of I guess some would argue maybe weakening the team in the sense that you're spreading more people across more entries, and you're not kind of focusing the best people on the best cars, I guess I would kind of characterize that. So I guess let's kind of get your thoughts in terms of the context of this. So if Andretti's problems have mostly been kind of race execution, things like pit stops and strategy, do you think shrinking to three cars has the potential to be a big positive for them in the sense that they've got this opportunity now to move some of those people from the fourth entry over and kind of focus their crew and all of their personnel on three cars as opposed to four?
Yes. I mean, the short answer is definitely yes. You know, I think they strike me as being in a position where there's a couple of things that are going on here. You know, I guess, and just from kind of a zoomed out point of view, one is what you just mentioned, which is there is just, we know this to be true for all the teams. This is kind of true across motorsports in the US right now, but particularly in IndyCar, given the size of the field, it's hard to find really top tier talent across the board, to spread out across your entries. And so really just like, not speaking specifically about Andretti, even just thinking more broadly about like the resources that you have and the human capital that you have at your disposal, it might just be that for that team in Indianapolis, that, you know, the pool of available talent is sort of tapped, and so you're making some compromises. Either we've heard this about Ganassi, so that's a total sidebar, that they're adding a car, and so you kind of have to ask that question a little bit of their situation. Like, okay, you guys are adding a car. I'll kind of get into that in a second. But if we talk about Andretti, we know there to be a pinch on really elite talent, you know, from an engineering perspective, from a management perspective, from a strategy, you know, mechanics, all of these things. And so not to speak about that particular organization at all, just to kind of say, all right, the nuts and, you know, the basics here are that by downsizing, you'll be able to pull together your best talent more effectively for the cars that are going to be competitive. That I think that's for sure not an insignificant component to how this can be a big positive for this team. The other part of it, and this is maybe speaking a little bit more specifically about this organization, to your point, we've just seen Andretti be a little all over the place compared to Penske and Ganassi. It has just appeared as though Penske and Ganassi have been more reliably sort of executing on their potential weekend to weekend. It's not to say that they're necessarily always great. Like, they don't, you know, if you just took stock of where all three of those teams are, we'll kind of push Arrow McLaren to the side just because they're a little bit of a newcomer in this conversation, but kind of the original big three in the series, if you just took FP1 at every event, you'd kind of say like Andretti's kind of right there probably. Like, it's, you know, so in terms of their potential showing up to race weekends, they've clearly shown they've been winning races through this span of the last few years when they have not really genuinely been in championship contention. So you kind of know that they have it in there. Distilling everything down to three cars, I think just it will likely enable them to become more focused on the task at hand, to allot resources as necessary in a different way where necessary over the course of the year. Like, they'll have a little bit more sort of spare change to throw around in terms of like, okay, if Ericsson's squad is having a particular type of issue, they'll be able to just put more attention on that. If Colton is like struggling with something in particular, or they've got some kind of thing going on behind the scenes, they'll just be able to, Michael will have more bandwidth. Like, just everybody who's involved, Rob Edwards, I mean, everybody who's overseeing the whole thing will just have a little more bandwidth to become more focused on the little things that are going on, which, that's the other part of it. Like, we clearly know, kind of watching all of this stuff from the outside and talking to everybody within the paddock, sometimes you can become a little tunnel vision to these things when you're in it and you're just having to show up at the racetrack weekend to weekend. But I think we can certainly recognize that you need to be able to do absolutely all the little things incredibly well to even be in the hunt at this point. I mean, that's definitely one of the more significant changes, I think, over the IndyCar series over the last 10 years. Like, we're seeing a lot of the same teams and a lot of the same drivers go win championships. So there is a formula, and you can kind of get around some of these things. But I think what certainly something that I've noticed is that as soon as you start making little mistakes, you're out. Like, there's no clawing it back at that point. You know, we've seen there have been a lot of championship runs over the last, since we've been doing the pod, we'll just say, like, over the last, you know, 3 to 5 years generally, that you sort of think, oh, Joseph or Colton or whoever, these guys that can go out and just, you know, they can go rip off Dixon. They, you know, they can go off and go out and rip off three or four race wins in a row if everything comes right. Sometimes they even go do that and still don't end up back in championship contention by the end of it. And so I say all that basically just to say, I think this is the right move for Andretti to see if just by becoming a little more focused on the three cars that are going to be competitive cars, you know, that, and so that's the other piece of this, that the fourth car in Andretti's situation has, I guess I would say, in the, with the exception of when they brought Hinch on kind of to replace Veach and, you know, that whole situation for like a year, Hinch, I know, even just by his standards, kind of didn't perform as, you know, and the team wasn't great that, you know, they were even more kind of, they've gotten better since then, I think you could say. But for the most part, their fourth car has, I think we can just kind of call a spade here, like, has been a part of a budget equation, less a competition equation. So that does end up just for the team, for, and you think about behind the scenes, you've got a bunch of people within the team that are having to oversee some component of every car, right? So you've got people that are looking after the parts. You've got people that are looking after, you've got a technical director who's overseeing the engineering and all that. Having a car there that you're not really getting anything out of, it's not there for the sake of, you know, being competitive, you know, and in the hunt for the championship and race wins and all those kinds of things, at a point that's just gotta be a distraction, you know? And so whether it's a distraction weekend to weekend for your primary cars, your primary engineers, you know, whatever, but by removing that, it's just one less variable, basically, you know, like, you can get sucked. I mean, I've been in situations where you get sucked into kind of like, somebody could be so adamant about, an engineer, a driver, whatever, can be so adamant about what they think about the car that you kind of say, I don't know. I mean, I don't feel that strongly about it. Maybe they're right, you know, and then it just like takes you down a rabbit hole. And this is not to talk about Devlin or whatever, but it's just the type of thing that a lot of times it just ends up creating more questions than answers, you know, in terms of the competitiveness for the team. And so for all those reasons, I think this is definitely the right move. It's an interesting one. You know, the one of the things that's totally external to all of this for next year from a competition point of view for these guys is just, there is this kind of looming decision that has not yet been made in terms of how this charter system, franchise system, whatever you're going to call it, is going to work. It sounds to me as though that is going to, in some way, shape, or form, be put in place to, dependent on kind of the championship standings at the end of next year. That's the only reason that I find this a little surprising, I guess, that they do this, is because we know that the team now has financial backing to be able to stand this up. You know, if they are downsizing to one, downsizing to three cars, and we kind of, you can speak a little bit about this, you know, we kind of have heard rumblings of, you know, is there like a satellite car here somehow in the mix? If that was the case, I would just walk back everything I just said about this being a good idea. Like having a fourth car as a satellite car is extra, like, not great in terms of all of those things that I just described. But, you know, there will be, I think, particularly depending on how the charter system ends up actually looking, I think that structure is not, you know, totally defined or decided on yet, but that could end up creating for some jockeying of entries and that kind of stuff going into the next year. So anyway, that's my download on all my various thoughts about Andretti downsizing to three cars.
For sure. I think I really like this whole thing, to be honest, for a lot of the reasons that you mentioned. And also, I'd just throw in there that the driver lineup's really nicely balanced with Marcus coming in as well, because we know how quick Colton and Kyle are and what they're capable of. Who knows? Maybe they've got the ability to become these kind of more consistent, rounded threats that the likes of Newgarden, Dixon, Pillow are when they're given the opportunity to do that within a team that is performing in a way that is capable of that. You know, we're quite happy to sit here and criticise Colton and Kyle for certain aspects of how they've raced or their performances in recent years, but we also have to kind of asterisk that a little bit with the team they're in, and there's obviously been some problems there, so it's a difficult situation. But I think with Marcus coming in, we've got a proven driver. We know his track record, we know how he performs at a top team, we've seen what he's capable of doing there. We also know that he is a driver who probably, you know, will be trying his hardest to be on par with Colton and Kyle, but might not actually get to that level of pace immediately, and hasn't necessarily demonstrated the amount of speed that those two have. But his racecraft and his ability to put races together has been much better than those two. So a really nice kind of balanced driver lineup in that sense.
Yeah, I just wanted to add quickly there that I think Marcus is, the more I sort of look at the different lineups across the field, the more I think he's just a really excellent add for this team, given the fact that they've still got two really young guys. Colton's been in the series for so long that we don't necessarily think of him in that category. But I think, yeah, I sort of look at the three of them and say, you know, I guess I sort of have the feeling that Kyle has shown to be elite pace on street courses, at road courses and street courses, and Marcus being as good as he is with the experience that he's got, especially from an execution point of view, but even just, you know, he's been at Ganassi. He knows what a good car feels like on every oval track at this point. Those were the events where he was occasionally, he did kind of punch above his weight relative to Alex and Scott, you know, sometimes more often than not, depending on just the stretch through the year. Having somebody who brings that level of, I mean, it reminds me of when we talked to Kyle, you know, after he won Long Beach, that just when you have teammates that just go out and perform and know what they're talking about, and then you get in this feedback loop with those guys of, then you try what they say they like, and you go out and you like it also. It just creates this trust and kind of, it brings the whole, it like brings your level of sanity up by bringing the level of chaos within the team down. And so Marcus seems like this, you know, Andretti seems like a team that has had a higher degree of kind of chaos, just in terms of weekend to weekend, where are they at? Throughout a weekend, where are they at? Do they end up qualifying in the top six and then none of them are finishing inside the top eight, and it just have all this kind of stuff that seems like, what the hell is going on here? That Marcus seems like just brings kind of a vibration level that will calm some of that down. So yeah, I definitely, and you get the feeling that he's an easy enough guy to get along with, like, you know, that's, I think he'll bring a little bit of the just lead by example kind of attitude to this squad with two young guys that I think will be receptive to that, because they're both, ultimately Colton and Kyle are both just like good dudes. You know, they're just out there trying to do their thing. I think they are good teammates, particularly in the right situation. So yeah, I'm excited to see from this group. You know, it's a little bit like Rossi going to Aero McLaren, just in the sense that hard to know, like, how long will it take Marcus to kind of get up to speed? And you got to give him some time to figure that out and whatever. But in a way, I feel like what he's really bringing to the table is that expertise on the oval side of things, you know, which that frankly is that translates a lot faster, basically. So I think, yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to watch.
All three of their competitive cars last season had a worse average finish than average start, which did happen in IndyCar for some drivers, but I don't think there's any other team where their, you know, so many of their competitive cars had that record. So there's definitely some work for Marcus to do. There's work for that team to do, but a lot of what we've talked about earlier in this episode with downsizing three cars, they've got the potential to fix a lot of those issues and be a lot more competitive. So it's going to be interesting to see. Let me re-knows this slightly, JR, just lastly before we head to Linus and kind of come to that Ganassi setup. And so we've told Andretti that it's a good thing for them to downsize to three cars from four. And Ganassi are going in the complete opposite direction and expanding to five cars. So how much of their competitiveness kind of makes this easier? And let me kind of phrase that a little bit better. Ganassi are in a totally different situation to Andretti, where they've just won the championship and they've got Scott Dixon and Alex Palou delivering the results that they know they're going to need. They've got Marcus Armstrong, a strong rookie who's won Rookie of the Year this year, and suddenly the opportunity to sign last year's Indy Next champion Linus Lundqvist pops up as well. And you think, yeah, I think everyone is suspecting that Kiffin Simpson's bringing a pretty significant budget to that team, and he's someone that they've taken on to kind of fulfill that role and probably someone they're not expecting a lot from. So give the listeners a bit of insight in that sense. What do we think about this decision to expand? Because for me, it's obviously not as critical as Andretti's situation, because they're already doing all of the things that we expect Andretti to be doing. They're winning the championships, they're winning the races, and they've got two, now they've got Palou, they've got two solid drivers there who are capable of winning championships and winning races. So it's almost like if they can afford to have someone like Kiffin, who might turn out to be good anyway, that they can afford to take a risk on someone like him in order to fulfill bringing some young guys into the team and basically evaluating them even maybe over the next year or two to see if they're someone that they're, you know, potentially going to be the next Alex or Scott. And if they're not, they can be moved on and replaced, and that's a kind of conveyor belt of talent. And as long as the performances don't take a hit by having so many cars and having spread so thin, then it's all right at the end of the day.
Yeah, I guess there's a little bit to unpack about the whole thing. You know, the first thing I think that just comes to mind is, well, the concern that you have to have is more of what Scott Dixon felt like he was going through, and I think was going through, where, you know, he felt like he was getting kind of shortchanged in terms of he had one fewer crew member on the nine car than the other cars had, and all this kind of stuff. So it does, like the first thing, just relative to the conversation that we were having about Andretti, that does come to mind that seems kind of hard to argue with or hard to get around is, you know, it's just tight on staff. So that seems like kind of a difficult barrier to get around, or a difficult sort of set of constraints to find like a good workaround for. Ganassi, you know, they have the multi-car IMSA program in-house. They've got other stuff going on. So maybe that's, I think, you know, they have other personnel to pull from other things to go do this. But, you know, that's good for running an extra car at Indy. That doesn't really suffice as a long-term strategy, you know, and running IndyCar over the course of the entire season. Like, that's, you know, you're going to end up kind of a weird revolving door of people and stuff like that. And so, yeah, I mean, I kind of worry for even their contenders. I worry for Scott Dixon in particular, because he seems like this has already happened at one point for him. And at some stage, you have to kind of think that, you know, Scott's kind of needs, when you've got Alex Palou on the same team, like, he needs everything that anybody can give him to be able to be right there. I mean, you saw at the end of the season this past year that he's still got the goods, you know, but like I mentioned earlier, just the whole level is coming up. So anything that's not kind of perfect or not perfectly arranged or organized on your behalf or whatever, it's just going to cost you at some point. Like, that's going to be a thorn in your side at some point during the season. And it's so competitive that you just can't really afford to have those. So I guess that's the concern in this scenario. If they manage to avoid that being an issue, which you got to feel like they think they can, and maybe and it's certainly possible in the right conditions to do that. Ultimately, this is a business. So it comes down to, you know, like if you can manage to like overpay people to be on your team instead of somebody else's, you can probably get the right number of the right guys. Like that's also a reality of the sport and just the business of it. My guess is that this is just an absolute necessity for them to do, basically, to make the business of the rest of the championship contending cars that they have make any sense.
JR, thanks so much for your insight. It's been fantastic. And congratulations, commiserations for 100 episodes, according to Apple, of the Race IndyCar podcast. I feel like at this point, I should publicly thank you and apologize to you for your many long prisoner hours spent on this podcast with me. So thank you very much. Without a shadow of a doubt, I've enjoyed every minute of it. So
same here, Jack.
Yeah, we're going to continue doing
it. Same here, buddy.
Yeah. So without further ado, JR, I'll let you go, and I'm going to head over and speak to Linus Lundqvist about his big move to Chip Ganassi Racing.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's get into it. I guess I wanted to start with, you know, thinking back to when you won the Indy Next Championship and then not quite being able to get the IndyCar seat, everything that happened there, and you spent almost a whole season, you know, kind of on the sideline there, not knowing kind of, you know, what was going to happen. You were kind of driver coaching for HMD and Indy Lights, trying to make sure you were kind of staying in the paddock and speaking to team bosses and keeping your face, you know, kind of known around the paddock. And then within the space of a month, you obviously got the call up to Maya Shank to replace Simon Pagenaud there. And then within that month, you were driving for the team that ended up winning the championship in IndyCar. So you've gone from the sideline to what most people would describe as the best team in IndyCar. So I guess just reflect a little bit on that journey and how quickly your life kind of totally did a U-turn, in that, especially in terms of your career anyway, you know, things really, really, you know, turning around for you there.
Absolutely. And I would say not only career-wise, but life-wise, because you, not only for me, but my family and everybody that's helped me as well, because you dedicate so much time and energy and you dedicate your whole life to this one goal to make it. And like you said, after winning the championship, the NNX championship, the hope then was to be on the grid full time this year. That didn't happen. And then I think I said to you last time as well, but I was kind of put in a position that either I stay at home and just hope that, you know, the call will come up and say that, hey, we have a seat, go race. But I realized that's not really going to happen. So I told myself, all right, I'm going to do everything I can to, you know, create an opportunity for myself, or at least be ready if there's an opportunity. So, I was a coach for better part of the year, which, you know, kept me at the races, because that was the biggest thing for me, that I still wanted to run into these, you know, team bosses and team principals and remind them that, you know, I'm still around, that if something pops up, then I'll be the first guy that they call. And I would like to believe that if I hadn't have done that, then the opportunity with Maya Shank Racing wouldn't have presented itself. And without that, obviously I would not be in the position of where I am, because, you know, that call came from Mike Shank, I think like 4 or 5 days before the Nashville race weekend. So it all happened very, very quickly. And then after the Nashville weekend, then obviously people that I've been hassling and calling for two and a half years time, all of a sudden they were calling me, which was a pretty nice feeling. And then, you know, a couple of weeks later, then was it, like you said, what many would describe, and including myself, the best team in IndyCar. So yeah, my life definitely changed over those last couple of weeks, the race that we did.
For sure. You must know of other IndyNext drivers, either ones that you know directly or ones that you've seen in the past who haven't made it after going through a situation like you went through, where you've not managed to get on the grid. Obviously, in that situation, you lose quite a lot of momentum, don't you, with the teams that you're speaking to. And once you've been kind of, you know, on the sideline and you've not been racing, it's sometimes even more difficult for you to get a seat, because there's other drivers then kind of creating headlines and ones that are racing full time that are able to kind of put themselves in the shot window a bit more. So I'm guessing, you know, a few drivers from the past who haven't been able to do what you've done and turn that into an IndyCar seat. So did you have a backup plan, or did you even consider what not being in IndyCar, you know, might look like for you? Because I guess whereas some drivers maybe have dreamed of racing in IndyCar for their whole lives, obviously you've been a big fan of IndyCar for a long time, but I think when you came to the US in 2020, it was that was when things kind of really became obvious to you that you were, you know, going to push for an IndyCar seat and the scholarship was going to be able to help get you to that point. But yeah, I guess I'm just curious if you ever had a backup plan, or if you had ever thought about what might happen if you didn't make it to IndyCar in the next year or so after you'd won the Indy Next Championship.
Yeah, no backup plan. And I was scared and I was petrified, honestly, if, you know, what would happen if this didn't work out. But I also believe that, you know, when we won the championship, you know, we were in a position where we didn't have a seat. And like you said, it's difficult being on the sideline when everybody else is, you know, creating headlines and, you know, winning races. And I know that at the end of the year, there's going to be a new champion and you're very quickly forgotten in this world. And that's why it was so important to me to still be out there and still talking to these people, because all of the feedback that I got from the team, you know, the teams that I was speaking with, was that, you know, we'd love to have you, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's a business. And if, you know, the financial and the business side doesn't come together, then you're not going to be in it. And I realized that as well. So it was just about, you know, waiting for that right opportunity and keeping my name in the pot. So if there were, you know, an availability, then, you know, they'd at least consider me. And then when I did get the chance to prove myself as well in IndyCar, because I think that's a big change, is that sure you won races and championships in the lower series, but can you actually be good and fast in the highest level? And I think once we showed that we have the speed, people are like, okay, well, you know, the kid's actually pretty good even in an IndyCar. And I think that was the big switch. And I think that, hopefully, at least I'd like to think that that's kind of what convinced Chip and Mike to say that, okay, let's give this kid a call, see what he says.
All right, let's put you on the spot then with Chip and how everything kind of played out there. I know you can't go into too much detail, but tell us a little bit about how the whole Ganassi move came about. Obviously, you know, if we're looking at this from like the listener's point of view, we saw you get the chance with Meyer Shank, and I guess people probably thought, well, if he does a good job here, he might be able to persuade Meyer Shank to give him a seat next year. And I don't think many people really saw Ganassi come in from kind of behind the scenes a little bit to make a move on you. I know there were other teams who were really interested in you as well after what you were able to achieve in the races that you did. But in as much detail as you're allowed to, tell us a little bit about how that all kind of came about and what happened there.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I was a little bit surprised too, because I think, and especially as a young driver, like you have a team like Chip Ganassi Racing, it's almost a bit of a unicorn in the terms of, like, you hear so many stories about it and you watch it from afar, but you can never really get up close and maybe, you know, to touch it. But, you know, I've known Michael for quite some time, and we spoke at length across 2 years. I've kind of chased him around and to, you know, maybe we can look at doing something together. So we have a good relationship, and we met many times and actually spoke about maybe doing something for this year, but it never came together. And obviously we kept in touch throughout the year, sat down. And like I said, you know, after Nashville, the whole thing changed a little bit, where, you know, it went from me always calling them to them actually reaching out to me saying that, hey, you know, but what are your plans for next year? Do you have anything decided? Which I didn't at the point or at that time. And obviously after that, it kind of progressed and we talked a little bit more into making this a reality. But yeah, I was not surprised, but, you know, making it into a reality rather than speaking about making something happen was incredible. And for me, it was like, yeah, I know where I want to go. I know where I want to be. although I will say, you know, I will always be deeply thankful to Mike and Jim at Shank for giving me the opportunity, because without that, I wouldn't have been in this position at all. So, you know, I really enjoy the races that I did together with them, but I look forward to this new chapter with Chip Ganassi Racing and hopefully many wins and even championships in the future.
Yeah. I know you've kind of done a lot of the work across your career by yourself or with a small group of like people from Sweden and some of your friends, and you know, you're not one of these people who has a massive back-in and has, you know, kind of 50 people in an office kind of doing your stuff for you. And a lot of what you've been able to do in getting to where you are now has been through your own efforts and kind of banging doors down and like you said, you know, keeping relationships with these team bosses and stuff like that. But what was that period like before you signed for Ganassi? Because I imagine once the piece of paper came through from Ganassi, or the email came through maybe these days, that you know, it was pretty clear at that point you didn't have much of a decision to make given the kind of stature of Ganassi and stuff like that. But the part before that, did you have some advice? Did you have, you know, a manager helping you with all that kind of stuff, or did you kind of keep it the same as you've kind of done all the way through, where you've kind of kept a small group kind of helping you out and made the kind of big decisions on your own?
Yeah, I mean, the decisions are always going to be on my own. You know, I'm going to have the last say in where I want to go. But I do work with a management company, Sports Management Network, that they also work with, I think, Kirkwood and McLaughlin. So they deal, so they help me out in negotiations. But in terms of, you know, relations and, you know, getting introduced to teams, etc., I did very much that work myself. But I think it's good that when it comes down to the negotiation parts, so basically it was like, okay, we want to make something happen. And then usually I bring the third or my manager kind of into the picture a little bit more and like, okay, you know, make me the best contract here and make it happen. And I think that's been very good so far, at least. I mean, this is our first contract that we landed and it was a pretty good one.
Yeah, well, I guess you've kind of gone into every kind of year of your racing, at least recently anyway, over the past few years, kind of not knowing whether you'd have the budget to finish the year or if you'd been able to kind of get through. So I guess there must have been some pretty crazy points over the past at least kind of 4 years, maybe even longer, where you've kind of had to start a year without knowing, you know, whether you're going to finish it. And I guess along the way, you've had to do some pretty crazy things to try and keep in a seat and keep your, you know, kind of championships going. So I guess to be in that position where you are now is, you must be feeling a lot better.
Yeah, 100%. I don't think a single season throughout my career I've known that I was actually going to be able to finish it, because you've always had to kind of, you know, chase a little bit more money to make sure that you can actually finish the year. And in a funny way, because it, you know, a lot of the seasons that I've actually finished has been because of the team, because we've been in a position that we've either led or at least fought for the championship. And then usually racing teams, they want to win their racers. So if they have a driver that's fighting for the championship, they say, all right, well, we're going to let you continue and hopefully you can win it. And that's usually how, you know, my years has been. And funnily enough, I think it almost prepared me a little bit for the Nashville and the opportunities that I had with Chang, because I knew what was at stake going into that. Because if I did well, then I knew that I'd done myself a huge favor. But if I didn't perform those weekends, then I knew that potentially could have been the end of my career, because you're lucky if you get, you know, one of these opportunities. Usually there are no second opportunities. So I knew that this was my one time to kind of show what I had. And in a funny way, almost my whole career prepared me for that moment, because you've always had to perform every single weekend, because otherwise you might not be racing the next one. And it was very much the similar, you know, this opportunity that I had to do the IndyCar races. So it wasn't that much of a difference for me. And like I said, in a funny way, it almost worked out to my favor to have that, to be in that position throughout my career, that you've always had to perform every single weekend.
It's kind of why I was asking you about whether you're having much help with your kind of decision making, because I guess there's quite a lot of drivers out there, not all of them, but quite a lot of them out there who maybe the decision of what team to choose or what championship to go into is not like the be all and end all of their career, where if they make the wrong decision, then they can bounce back. They'll have other opportunities, where I don't think you've really had that in your junior career. You've kind of had to always kind of make the right decision, and if you don't make the right decision, then like you said, you know, that could mean you're not racing the next weekend or the next season. So I guess you've kind of learned to deal with that that level of pressure, and it's helped you in your racing, because you kind of, I don't want to say you become numb to it, because obviously that pressure's always there, and I know you put a lot of pressure on yourself to perform and stuff like that, but if you were a driver who was just thrust into that situation of Meyer Shank without having the career that you've had, and were put under that level of pressure, I'm sure a lot of drivers would struggle to deal with that in a kind of one-off scenario, whereas you were obviously well prepared for it.
Yeah, I'd like to think so, at least. And as well, you know, I told myself that, you know, this year is, sure, we're going to spend a lot of time on the sideline, but if there's an opportunity that were to come up, I want to stay ready. So, you know, I stayed ready physically, and, you know, I tried to prepare as much as I possibly could. And obviously I did two tests throughout the year as well, with one with Rayola at Texas and one with Carpenter at Sebring. So I had some form of seat time, because that was important to me as well, to at least have some, you know, amount of laps, because of, before that, you know, the last race that I did was at Laguna, which was, you know, 8 months or 9 months, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And that's a big break of not really being in a car. So at least I had a couple of laps. So if the opportunity were to come up, then I was somewhat prepared. Obviously far from ideal, but at least I knew that I could kind of show what I could do, which I think worked out in the end.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk a little bit about next year then. I'm sure you're very excited about it. You've already had a couple of tests with Ganassi and kind of settling in. And I know you've stayed behind a little bit later into the off season than maybe some drivers would to try and get yourself up to speed. I'm kind of interested in how you're approaching this year on the kind of continuing the theme of pressure, because you're going into this year with a multi-year deal. The first year of your career, I reckon, based off of what you were just saying there, where you're not worrying about finishing, or whether you're going to be racing the next weekend. You're kind of set for the year. So that must mean there's a lot of pressure off in that sense, that you're not kind of fighting that every week. But also, you've got now the added pressure of being the teammate of a six-time champion and the reigning champion in the series. So what does that trade-off kind of look like for you? And how do you kind of feel going into the team in that sense, that you've got this kind of weight off your shoulders a little bit, that you've finally got a full-time seat and it's in the best team in the series, but also the expectations are going to be high now because of the level of driver that you're kind of sharing with?
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, you know, there's a certain weight off my shoulders knowing where I'm going to be for the next few years. But there's obviously an added weight that comes with being a Chip Ganassi Racing driver. I mean, just look at the season, for example. I mean, the bar has been set. Mm-hmm. So you know that you're going up against, you know, the best drivers in the whole field as your teammates. But for me, I just see it as an opportunity, because firstly, I am a rookie. And this is probably the best environment ever to learn from, having these teammates and having not only the drivers, but the engineers and the, you know, the level that the whole team is operating on. It's so high, higher than I've ever seen. And to me, that's extremely motivating, because you see the engineers and the mechanics and the crew chiefs, they put in so much effort that you want to put in, you know, even more effort, and kind of pay it back to them. Which is extremely cool. And as well, like, from a driver point of view, to have Scott Dixon and Alex Palou as my teammates, it's incredible. You know, already I was with the team at Portland at Laguna, kind of watching from the inside, seeing how they operate and how they work. And I think I made, I don't know, probably more notes that I've done throughout my career over those over those 2 weekends, and just watching and observing how they work and operate. So yeah, I'm incredibly excited to share the team with them next year.
What was it like going into Turn 1 at Indy at the Oval there in the test for the first time? I guess we were talking a little bit off air, not to set this up for the listeners, but we were talking off air about how it's settling in for you moving into Ganassi and being part of that team. But, you know, not only was it your first test there, so everything kind of, you know, became real for you with the Ganassi test, but also it was your first time on the oval in an IndyCar. So two pinch me moments in one. So what was that like? Talk us through that.
Yeah, very much like that. It was still one of the craziest days of my life, I think, because it meant so much in so many ways. Because firstly, it was my first outing for Chip Ganassi Racing. And even to have that moment is, it's such a big time in my career. But then to do it at the Speedway, and my first time around the Speedway as well, is incredible. So yeah, it was a double happiness in that sense. But it was incredible. I still remember like my first couple of laps doing the ROP, and obviously you have the stages where you have to stay within a certain speed to get through. I still remember like my first two laps, I felt, Jesus Christ, this is so fast. And then I saw my average speed was like 189, and I knew that I had to get like to 210 to even pass like the first stage. And then realizing, like, say on qualifying day, where the average speed is like 230 or 233, whatever they do, it was yeah, pretty crazy those first couple of laps. But then you get a little bit more used to it, and at the end of the day you were able to do it, you know, flat and quite comfortably. So, but yeah, those first couple of laps, turn one looks incredibly tight because you don't see an exit, you just see a wall approaching. So yeah, it took a little bit of time to get used to the speeds, that's for sure.
What's it going to mean to you to race in the 500? Obviously there's people like Kenny Brack, and obviously a lot more recently Marcus Ericsson to kind of look up to on your side, but I know it's a race you've watched for a long time anyway, and you know, I guess what are you kind of expecting that to be like from a perspective of I guess you've been before and you've done the event, but not as a driver obviously, and not with the amount of media and events and all of that kind of stuff that goes with the extra practice and how much track time you get and stuff like that. So I guess just, you know, knowing it's the Indy 500, right? It's the biggest, one of the biggest races in the world. What are you kind of thinking heading towards that?
Yeah. Like I said, I've been watching that race for a long time. I've been fortunate enough to attend the last few years at the race, and even as a spectator, it is one of the coolest things that I've ever seen. So I don't know what to expect as a driver going into the race. Obviously I've spoken to some of them, and but at the same time I don't want to have expectations of what to feel or what it's going to be like, because I know that this is, you know, extremely few people get to experience what it's like to be a driver at the Indianapolis 500. So to be fortunate enough to experience it, I want to go in basically with, you know, a blank mind and just, you know, experience the raw emotions of what it's like. Then I know myself as well, because I'm a competitor, I love to win, that's what I'm here to do, so a lot of focus is going to go towards that. But I'm going to try to put aside a little bit of emotion to just, you know, enjoy the spectacle that the race actually is.
For sure. Tell us a little about what your kind of off season looks like now then, and from a listener's perspective and from my perspective, I've not been a Chip Ganassi racing driver, sadly, but luckily for Chip Ganassi. Tell us a little bit about how much you can do in an off season, because I guess at least from what I understand, you know, you might want to go in and speak to your engineers and get to know them a little bit better and explain to them kind of like what you like from the car, what kind of setup you like, or how you like the car to perform. But then things like that can't really be changed in the factory, and you won't really know things like that until you actually get out and test on track. So is it a case of more like team bonding and just kind of getting to know everybody and really settling in and making sure you know where everything is and just kind of silly things like that? Or do you feel like there is quite a lot you can achieve as a driver in terms of like being prepared for how the car is going to be set up, how you're going to perform, and how the on-track things are going to kind of play out?
Yeah, I think both. And I think this will be, say, for example, I think me and maybe Scott Dixon's off seasons looks a little bit different, because, you know, he knows already everything, basically, but to me, everything is very new. So, you know, even the simplest of things are still new to me and the team. So what I try to focus now, obviously, is anything performance related that we can, we push to the max. But a lot of it is honestly like going back to school for me. Like they almost host like seminars or like lectures for me to go through. And it's basic stuff like what kind of system they use when we look through data, or, you know, the feedback papers, whatever it might be. It's good for me to get comfortable with it now. So I'm not trying to get comfortable with it at the track, because when we're at the track, we're trying to streamline anything that we can. So a lot of that process is being done now. And like I said, I think a lot of it as well is personally, at least, I'd like to spend as much time as I can basically with the team. Firstly, because I enjoy it. And secondly, as well, there's a lot of new faces for me to learn. And just trying to get myself being more and more included within the team and understand how they operate, what they like, what they don't like, etc. I was on coffee duty for Laguna, for example, so I learned what everybody wanted for coffee. So we're taking the next steps in that as well. So it's the whole process of just being incorporated and included within the team and see how they all work.
I know Alex Pillow likes his coffee, so I hope you got his order right and you got everything perfect there, because if you didn't, then you might be on the naughty step with that one.
I know. Yeah, to tread carefully around that.
All right. So in terms of how you approach a season, obviously next year is a big year for you. Do you have set targets? I know some drivers like to say, I want to finish this position in the championship. I want to win this number of races. I want this many pole positions. I want this many podiums. And I know there's some drivers out there who really don't like to do any of that sort of thing and just like to focus on, certain goals that aren't necessarily kind of number driven or stat driven. Kind of where are you at this point? And, what would next season look like for you in terms of a good season? What would you, if we can kind of fast forward to the end of next season and we finish the year and you've achieved something, what would that be to really have you happy with your performance?
Win the championship.
There we go.
Yeah,
there we go.
I say half jokingly, but at the same time, that's why we're here. And mm-hmm. you don't go into a team like Chip Ganassi Racing with expectations anything below it. Mm-hmm. But you have to take into consideration that, you're going up against, some of the best drivers in the world, and it is your first full season. So there's going to be a lot of learning to do. And I realized that, and the target is not to win every single race of the year, because we know that we can't do that. But I'm not a big fan of setting hard targets, like a number, say that we have to finish this position. I think that the goal for me is to maximize every single weekend, whatever, the speed that I have that weekend, whatever the car is, if I'm only fast enough to be 10th, then, I'm going to try to make sure that I'm at least 10th that weekend, or, fight to be 9th at least. So that's more my approach into next year's, make sure that we maximize every single weekend. And obviously a lot of learning, and trying to learn from my teammates, especially, and see what they do so well. But like I said, at the end of the day, I'm a competitor. I'm here to win. So if we have a chance and we have the speed to win a race or two, then we're definitely going to go for it.
Awesome. Well, Linus, thanks so much for joining us on the pod. Thanks as always for being so candid and open about your experiences. And it always makes for a great interview. So thanks for joining us. And we wish you all the best for next season. Hopefully we'll speak to you before the season starts. But if we don't, let's hope for a strong start in St. Pete.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Always a pleasure speaking to you, Jack.
Hopefully you enjoyed that candid interview with Linus Lundqvist. Nice to get some behind the scenes kind of discussion on driver contracts. Not always easy for them to talk about on the record, but nice that Linus gave us a little bit of insight into what had happened with him as he joined Ganassi, and what had happened while he was kind of sat on the sidelines a little bit. He's definitely an interesting character, and his career history is very interesting. You can go back through our back catalogue and listen to more interviews with Linus where he talks about his background. We had him on when he was in Indy Lights, as it was then, now Indy Next, and we've had him on while he was kind of breaking through with Maya Shanker at the end of the 2023 season. So definitely go and check those episodes out. A bit of news for you: we've got an episode coming up which we're calling a tech special. That'll be all things aero setup. A lot of people ask about dampers. That's always the biggest topic in IndyCar when it comes to anything mechanical, tech, that sort of thing. Tech's just the broad kind of term we're using for it, but we want your questions. So you can email us podcasts@the-race.com, or you can send us a voice note where your voice will be featured on the show. So you can put your question in voice form and email that to us. You can also use social media. Obviously JR and I are on social media, or The Race as well. You can send your questions on any of those platforms. Probably best to send them to our email, but if you do prefer social media, you can do that. We'll have a very special guest with us who is an expert on all things IndyCar tech, aero, etc., etc. We'll reveal that guest a little bit closer to the time, but we're definitely interested in seeing what you guys come up with and what questions you want to ask. We've actually already had some come in from some people who maybe got a sneak preview that the tech episode was coming up and predicted it, or just so happened to send tech questions in around the time we were planning a tech special. So very interesting on that side. Definitely get your questions in. We'll do our best to get them answered by someone who's now independent and will be able to answer lots of different questions. It's not necessarily worked for every team in the IndyCar paddock, but definitely has a good working knowledge of what's going on inside the paddock. So they'll be there to answer your questions. Make sure you leave us a review on Spotify or Apple or wherever you're listening to the podcast if you enjoy it. It means a lot to us and helps with pushing the podcast up the charts and things like that. So that's always handy. We really appreciate it. And make sure you check out the-race.com for all your IndyCar news, features and analysis. And check out our back catalogue where we've got plenty of episodes. One of our most recent interview episodes with Marcus Ericsson on his move to Andretti. Marcus is always a good interview, so that was a lot of fun. So go back and check some out those episodes. That's all for this week's episode of the Race IndyCar Podcast.
The Athletic.